Picture this. January 1945, on the remote island of Guam, General Haywood Hansel, brilliant, principled, a poet at heart, receives devastating news from his superior. This isn't working. You're out. His replacement? Curtis LeMay, a man so intimidating that his mere presence made rooms fall silent. These two men, standing awkwardly together in a tropical paradise turned wartime airbase, represented opposing visions of how air power might reshape warfare. Their conflict would determine whether bombing could be both effective and moral, a question that still haunts military planners today. The handover wasn't just a personnel change. It marked a pivotal moment when technological dreams collided with harsh reality, forcing a moral reckoning. Would America stick to its principles of precision bombing, even if it meant prolonging the war? Or would it embrace a more brutal approach that promised quicker victory at a terrible ethical cost? In the 1930s, a small group of young pilots at Maxwell Field in Alabama formed the Bomber Mafia. Their revolutionary vision was elegantly simple. Identify an enemy's industrial choke points and use precision bombing to target only these vital nodes, eliminating the need for trench warfare slaughter and avoiding civilian casualties. Their approach depended on an extraordinary device created by Carl Norden, a reclusive Dutch engineer who believed sunlight caused stupidity. His bomb sight, an analog computer with 64 complex algorithms, promised unprecedented accuracy, supposedly able to drop a bomb into a pickle barrel from 6 miles up. At $1.5 billion in 1940s dollars, it was the third most expensive World War II project after the B-29 bomber and Manhattan Project. The Bomber Mafia's doctrine had four tenets. Massive bombers would penetrate enemy defenses. Bombing could occur in daylight. Daylight enabled visual targeting with precision bomb sights. And high-altitude bombing would keep aircraft beyond anti-aircraft range. What made their thinking revolutionary wasn't just technical innovation, but moral vision, using technology to make warfare more humane and less devastating to civilians. But would this dream survive contact with the enemy? The ultimate test of the Bomber Mafia's theories came in August 1943 with raids on Schweinfurt, Germany, home to factories producing 80% of Nazi Germany's ball bearings. The theory? Destroy these factories and collapse the entire German war machine without civilian casualties. The results were catastrophic. Only 80 of approximately 2,000 bombs hit their targets. American forces lost 60 planes and 552 airmen. The supposedly critical factories resumed operation within weeks. The Norden bombsight's precision failed in actual combat conditions due to mechanical issues, terrified bombardiers, and cloud cover that made visual targeting impossible. Yet the Bomber Mafia doubled down. This cognitive dissonance, as psychologist Leon Festinger would later call it, meant contradictory evidence strengthened rather than weakened their conviction. Despite the disaster, Hansel delusionally called Schweinfurt one of the turning points of the war. Curtis LeMay, who led part of the raid, remained practical. He dismissed the planners as swivel chair target analysts seeking a non-existent easy victory. His home later featured murals of the raid, not as triumphs, but as reminders of failure. By 1944, Hansel and LeMay were in the Pacific Theater testing their bombing philosophies. Hansel took command in the Mariana Islands, determined to apply precision bombing against Japan using the B-29 Superfortress. His first mission, San Antonio 1, proved America could reach Japan, but achieved little militarily. The initial raid damaged just 1% of the targeted Nakajima aircraft plant, with four subsequent attempts barely touching the target. The bombers had encountered an unexpected obstacle, the jet stream, hurricane-force winds at high altitude that made precision bombing impossible. Pilots reported tailwinds of 125 to 140 knots, accelerating planes to 480 miles per hour instead of 340 miles per hour. This narrow band of fast-moving air had been discovered by a Japanese scientist in the 1920s, but remained obscure as he published only in Esperanto. Unlike earlier challenges, the jet stream made high-altitude precision bombing fundamentally impossible. With his dream shattered, Hansel faced a choice: abandon his principles for victory by switching to area bombing with napalm. When ordered to conduct incendiary attacks, he ran only a minimal trial and delayed further attacks, leading to his removal from command. When Curtis LeMay took over in January 1945, he initially tried Hansel's precision approach. After repeated failures, he made a radical decision: abandon fundamental bombing doctrine. Instead of high-altitude missions, he'd send B-29s below the jet stream at 5,000 to 9,000 feet, flying at night to avoid being sitting ducks. His weapon of choice became napalm, jellied gasoline developed by Harvard chemists specifically to burn Japanese cities. On March 9, 1945, Operation Meeting House launched with over 300 B-29s loaded with napalm. LeMay waited alone in the operations room, telling a reporter, "I'm sweating this one out myself." The raid gambled his crews, the B-29 program, and his career. The results were apocalyptic. The bombers created an unprecedented firestorm across Tokyo. People burned alive, mothers found their babies on fire, and thousands drowned in canals seeking escape. The United States Strategic Bombing Survey later concluded, probably more persons lost their lives by fire at Tokyo in a six-hour period than at any time in the history of man, as many as 100,000 people. After Tokyo, LeMay's forces methodically devastated Japan, burning 67 cities over 6 months. The civilian death toll reached between 500,000 and 1,000,000. Even after Hiroshima and Nagasaki, LeMay continued bombing until Japan's surrender. LeMay's brutal campaign achieved his goal: a shortened war without a ground invasion of Japan. One Japanese historian later told researchers, "We must thank you Americans for the firebombing and atomic bombs, because without them, Japan would have surrendered later, allowing Soviet invasion and millions of Japanese starving that winter." Meanwhile, Hansel, who had tried to wage a more moral war through precision bombing, received little recognition. Yet it's his memory that moves us. The idealist who maintained his principles, even when abandoning them, offered a quicker path to victory. Modern precision bombing has achieved what the bomber mafia once dreamed of. Today's pilots can target just above the pinnacle at the base of the chimney to eliminate a single person without damaging floors below. The B-2 stealth bomber can strike 80 targets from 40,000 feet while remaining undetectable. This technological evolution raises uncomfortable questions. Was LeMay justified in abandoning principle for pragmatism? Was Hansel naive or heroic? As military historian Tommy Biddle asks, did we lose our souls? Did we go into a Faustian bargain to win, where winning cost us so much morally? Perhaps the most fitting conclusion is this: Curtis LeMay won the battle, Haywood Hansel won the war. The dream of precision bombing eventually triumphed, but only after the nightmare of firebombing had already transformed warfare forever. When we look to the skies today, we still live with the consequences of choices made by two men on a tropical island in 1945.